Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Rugby Bits Pod. We have a special episode of the pod today where we are having a preview looking at Wales and their prospects for the 2022 Six Nations. As you know, Wales are the defending champions in the Six Nations, and as always, or as it seems to be the case, they're being doubted and counted out already before the start, which means they're probably going to win a Grand Slam. So today we've got Will Owen. He writes for Rugby Pass, and he's also is with Squid Rugby in the Squid Rugby Pod and does a lot of work there. They have a great series where they look back at the 1987 Rugby World Cup, which I highly recommend as well. And of course, he's Welsh, so I think a good person to get in to talk about sort of the state of Welsh rugby prior to the Six Nations. Will, welcome to the Rugby Bits Pod.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. And thank you for the nice words about the podcast as well. I think today, above all, I am just a fan of the Welsh rugby team. So I think that's the perspective you're going to get from me.
Awesome. I think maybe let's just start with a bit of a state of the nation of sorts. I mean, it's about 18 or so months before the 2023 Rugby World Cup. Wayne Pivac has had 2 years at the helm, two Six Nations. Obviously a bit of a curtailed rugby program so far. So, yeah, what do you feel? What does the country feel about his progress so far? Obviously, transitioning from Warren Gatland is obviously a very heavy task for anyone, but are we happy with his performance so far?
It's an interesting one to call, isn't it? Because I think we all got so comfortable with Gatland that nobody really knows how to take Pivac at this stage, but I like him. I think that a lot of people, as you sort of alluded to earlier, like a lot of people have forgotten the fact that Wales won the Six Nations last year, because there were mixed results in the summer, to say the least, with that loss against Argentina, and mixed results in the autumn, getting 2 from 4 in the end. So, yeah, it's really difficult to sort of gauge quite how Wales are going under Pivac at the minute. But I think that certainly he knows what he's doing when it comes to planning for ahead of a Rugby World Cup. I think that he's blooding depth in the squad pretty well. He's giving a lot of people a go. And I think that it's where we've often fallen short in past Rugby World Cups in the last couple of times. So I think I do like Pivac. I think that there is some optimism to be taken out of his performance so far. This is maybe quite a vague answer to your question, but yeah, I think that there's a lot of positives to take from Pivac so far.
Yeah, and I think it's go for it, Jared.
Yeah, well, I think we can compare it to like when Sir Alex left Manchester United. I hate going to football references, but it's like the perfect analogy for it. And then in the sense that they've sort of, you've had somebody controlling the team so much and playing his style that it's almost like with Pivac taking over, he's still trying to get his style that he wants Welsh rugby to play. And I feel like it's almost like he's getting that Welsh New Zealand connection back of a little bit more, can we say, sexy play from Wales. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely spot on. I think that's the direction that he's certainly trying to take Wales in. I think that it's difficult because by the end of the Gatland era, Wales were just renowned for just winning games. And that was how we got to the semi-finals of the Rugby World Cup, where we got beaten by a certain Razzy Erasmus's South Africa team. And the less said about that, the better, obviously. But and we lost deservingly so, I will add. Yeah, so that was kind of the state Wales got to by the end of the Gatland era. And then there was a lot to be said of the way Wayne Pivac played under the Scarlets. So he won the Pro 14 with the Scarlets, as it was at the time, playing a really sort of attractive brand of rugby, as people like to call it. So it was a lot of sort of offloading, a lot of sort of kicking for space rather than necessarily for territory. And it was a very entertaining team that he had there. And I think a lot of people thought, yeah, okay, this is the way we're going to go. But naturally, it's a very complicated system that Pivac's tried to blood in, and naturally it takes a long time for him to kind of perfect it. So Wales, as you might see in some of the Squid Rugby videos, which you can now see, blah, 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 that Wales play a 1-3-2-2 system currently. So that's the way their forwards spread over the field. And it's the most difficult of the modern sort of forward shapes. I would argue that's probably the most difficult popular one to perfect. So I think the Wales have taken quite a long time to get there, and I don't think they've necessarily perfected it yet, but will they have by the 2023 World Cup? We can only wait and see.
Yeah, and just taking a quick step back to the November series as well. And just even from a Springbok supporter side, that performance or the test in November, it's so interesting how good Wales can be also when they have to strangle and sort of play a bit more of a conservative percentages game, because, you know, the stadium roof couldn't be closed, so that there was rain and they were able to just almost out-suffocate the suffocators. So it seems like there is almost a two-pronged way that Wales can go about their game plan these days.
Yeah, definitely. I think that is, you guys as South African supporters will know that is the best way to win games of Test rugby at this stage in sort of, you know, where rugby is at, is by, as you say, out-strangling the opposition. And we'll come on to teams like Ireland later on, but who are very, very good at that. I think that is the most efficient way of, if there's only one way you can play that and you want to win games, then that probably is the best way to do it. You're right that South Africa-Wales game in the autumn was the sort of game where both teams came away feeling like they deserved to win. So I guess, like, in retrospect, the team that did win, South Africa, is the one that deserved it. But yeah, it's definitely something that Wales will want to... They will want that to be at the forefront by the World Cup, that they can close out these games. You know, got Australia and Fiji and Nepal again. So it's going to be really, really difficult. So you just need to hope you can eke out those really difficult games where you don't play as well as maybe you can.
Yeah, well, I mean, I could ask. I think Wales, out of all the European sides, you'd say Wales probably had the best first half of 2021. And then the second half, look at the autumn series, a lot of the other sides got, you know, Ireland obviously beating New Zealand, France beating New Zealand, and England going through unbeaten, and sort of Wales went a little bit under the radar. It doesn't have, I know there's injuries and some of the older guys weren't playing. Do you think, where do you see Wales at the moment in terms of their development looking at the World Cup next year?
It's a really good question. It's a really important question as well, because as I said, those 2015 was the particularly bad World Cup for Wales, where they had that quarterfinal against South Africa, again, knocking us out, where we had like Tyler Morgan, who was like 19 years old at the time, playing outside centre, and like Gareth Hanscombe had been called up from out of the squad to play fullback. And there was just, you know, there was a point where it got so bad that Wales called up Eli Walker, who was already injured, into their squad. And they really, really struggled for depth. And I think Gatland then did approach that quite well ahead of 2019. But it was one step too far once again. So Wayne Pivak, in terms of building for a World Cup, I think has done a really, really good job, actually, because it often happens where somebody will get injured or become unavailable for whatever reason. And Wayne Pivak will call up somebody that you really didn't expect. And you go, oh, OK. And, you know, it's happened before where I've gone, who's that? With Bradley Roberts playing in the autumn. And I didn't even know who he was. But I think it is a really good strategy, because come the World Cup, that will mean that you've got a core squad of potentially 60 players who have all played well in Test rugby in the last 18 months. And I think that that's a really good position to be in. And there's certain positions where Wales were a lot stronger than others, but it's really good in terms of building a squad, having players who are experienced and understand the camp well.
Well, I agree with you there. The one thing I do find surprising with Pivak, maybe not surprising, but a ballsy approach from him, is that he seems to change his halfbacks quite early in games, and you don't often see them at Test rugby. I saw France did it in November, New Zealand, but outside of that, it's you don't often see your first choice fly half coming off after 50 minutes, and you see Bigger walking off, and you've got Callum Sheedy in on. He's tested his halfbacks with Kieran Hardy and Tomasa Williams. And I think he's doing a great job with that in particular, getting young guys finishing those games, so you don't end up in a situation like Ireland did a couple of World Cups ago, where they sort of lost Sexton and they went through about three fly halves or two fly halves, and Sexton was their main guy, and all of a sudden you got Paddy Jackson or someone along those lines finishing those games.
Yeah, I think that is a really important point, because particularly in those two positions, I think that as a coach, the one thing you want to show them is trust. And you mentioned Kieran Hardy's name there. I think that he's the sort of guy who, as much as, you know, I absolutely adore Gatland and think that he is, you know, one of the greatest coaches to ever coach international rugby. I think that if Gatland had Kieran Hardy in his squad, rather than being a potential starter in games like the England game where Hardy scored a try, that would be the sort of thing where Hardy is kind of like a small, more less of a game manager type scrum half, would be sitting on the bench for 80 minutes. And there have been plenty of times where that's happened before, and Gatland's been kind of guilty of leaving players off the pitch. But Pivac has shown a load of trust in those players. Sheedy mentioned as well, who is quite a prone risk taker, as well as Priestland, who's come back into the squad, who is a really brilliant player. I have no doubt that when he gets a bit of form and fitness, Reese Patchell will come back into the frame. So I think you're right that, like, those options not only need to be playing, but they need to really feel like they're trusted, because so much rides on those two positions. Whereas if everybody's just kind of viewed as the backup to bigger, then how are you going to step up at test level?
Yeah, I think that's very interesting sort of discussion on depth and the approach that PVAC has taken to integrate some newer options into the team. And I think it puts us in great context to where Wales is just coming into Saturday and the Six Nations campaign. Of course, they can't call upon the likes of Ken Owens, Talib Efalatau, Justin Tipperick, George North for this campaign. Alan Wynne-Jones, as we all know, might just come back on Friday evening, so I'm not going to rule him out yet. But all of those senior players who have, I mean, Alan Wynne-Jones probably has about 400 of those caps, but I think it's about 600 caps that they have altogether. Well, who do you think Wales is going to miss the most? And which sort of young player that perhaps viewers in South Africa haven't heard about is someone that you are looking forward to seeing them in terms of replacing these stalwarts?
So the obvious answer to who will miss the most is Alan Wynne-Jones, obviously. That's kind of the basic answer I could give you. Talib Efalatau is arguably Wales's best player, and Ken Owens is arguably one of Wales's most important players for the last sort of 10 years. But I think in the case of those few, it's just a good opportunity to blood somebody else, because Ryan Elias struggled a lot, who's the replacement hooker that we've had drafted in, has struggled a lot in past in Test rugby, but he had a really, really good autumn campaign, and he's become like a genuinely good sort of second or third choice hooker, depending on Elliot Dee's fitness. So with Ken Owens out, it's probably about time that Wales tried to find somebody else, because we've been very, very reliant on him for a number of years. Obviously, with Alan Wynne as well, there's Adam Beard comes up there, who's now a really renowned test player. And dare I say, one of the best second rows in the Northern Hemisphere, if not the world, or maybe outside of South Africa, at least, seeing as you're hogging all of the good second rows that the world's produced. But with that in mind, the player that Wales are probably going to miss the most, if I had to pick one, would probably be Josh Navidi, because he's really crucial to the way Wales play. He can slot into sort of a three or a two in terms of the grouping of Wales' system. He's just really good over the ball on both sides of it. And he's not the most flashy player, but he tackles absolutely everything. He rucks really, really well. And he's just one of the most efficient back row forwards you'll ever see. And yeah, he's just brilliant and unsung hero in a way. But in terms of young players coming up, so there's a few uncapped players in the squad. So there's Jack Morgan's been on excellent form for the Ospreys. James Ratty is one of those who clearly PVAC's called up because he liked the thought of another option playing at number eight, and can play second row as well. A lot of people wouldn't have said that he would play international rugby at all, but I think it's a really, really good thing that PVAC's given him a go and has again put trust in him to develop and seem an adaptable player that he can work with. Dowie Lake is an uncapped hooker who is playing at the Ospreys, who maybe if he sorts out his set piece work a little bit, he will be a really, really good test player, because he's got a very good mentality on the pitch. He makes a load of tackles. He's very similar to Elliot Dee in that respect. But for me, there's somebody who's already got a few caps who I would love to see stepping up. It's a guy called Ben Carter, plays in the second row at the Dragons. And again, he's a bit of a sort of an unsung kind of guy. Doesn't really do the flashy stuff, but he's very, very good just in the middle of the park, carrying, rucking, tackling. Set piece, he's brilliant as well. Quite an underrated player. And I think he's going to actually see a lot of game time with Alan Jones injured, whether that's off the bench for Will Rowlands or maybe even starting a few games with Adam Beard.
Now, well, sticking with the second row, is I'm quite a big fan of Sepp Davis. I don't know if it's just because he likes to kick the ball every now and then, but do you see Adam Beard and Will Rowland starting? Does Davis get a chance in there, or how do you see the second row shaping up without Alan Wynn?
I would really like to see Sepp Davis get a go. I think he's an excellent player. As you say, his skill set is phenomenal. He used to be a fly half until he was about 17, I think, so... and then move down to the second row. So hell of a shift. But you're right, he has a hell of a left boot on him. Like, he's got some vision for space. There was this great try set up for Josh Adams against London Irish, which I'm sure you will have seen, where he got the ball in broken field and booted the ball like a kind of like open play crossfield kick to Josh Adams, which is phenomenal. Like, not many second rows could do that. And yeah, especially in Wales, you know, like, we've not got the most skillful sort of second rows. It's a lot of them in that sort of Alan Wynn Jones or Adam Beard mold. Not to say those guys aren't skillful, because they definitely are. They're both really good offloaders. But yeah, Sepp Davis is somebody who's got a lot of potential. I think Bivak actually views him probably a bit more as a back rower, because in the autumn, even though Wales have a billion back rowers who are of that standard, that was who Pivac was playing off the bench in the back row in the autumn. So I don't know. I was speaking to my famous brother, Robbie of Squidge, about this morning. And he was saying that he thinks Wayne Pivac's trying to just turn Sepp Davis into Tyke Byrne, who, of course, he had playing for him at the Scarlets, which I think is actually really, really apt. That he's viewing him as the massive second row forward who's quite good in the breakdown, has some silky skills that he can make something like that out of. But Sepp Davis is a good player, but I think that he might opt for Will Rowlands. Personally, if I was selecting the team, which I'm not for good reason, I think I'd love to see Ben Carter get a go starting with Adam Beard.
I mean, well, talking about you know, Ben Carter, like you said, the trend now in rugby, for example, is these, how would you call it, these locks / flanks. Guys have transformed themselves into locks, from locks into these ball-playing flanks, but adding a bit of physicality, like Peter Steph Tutoi, Courtney Laws, Ty Burden. Do you think, is that the next piece for Wales? Because, I mean, I know you're blessed with amazing fetches and guys who can just, I mean, you can just roll off. One guy can get injured, someone else comes back on. I mean, like, you're going in with no Justin Tupuric. I still think you guys are still strong in that seven jersey. But do you think that lock / big carrying flanker is what you guys, was what Wales is needing next? Is what Wales is lacking in?
Yeah, I think that's an entirely fair observation, because I think that what Pivac wants out of his number seven is a bit of an edge forward, somebody who can offload, probably can kick, can pass, you know, competently. It's a big thing that when Tipperick's fit, him more so than the likes of Ellis Jenkins and the other Tame Basham and lads like that, like, Tipperick often like plays out the back of sort of forward pods, which is something that you so rarely get, even now that the game is so developed, that there's not many back row forwards I can think of in the world that maybe do that at certainly international level. Tipperick is definitely one of those examples. But in terms of other sort of the more bashful back row forwards, as you mentioned, like, I mean, Tame Basham is one of those, and Jack Morgan as well, who's now in the squad. They're both players who are really, really brutal physically. Both really, really great players. I think Jack Morgan, he's been playing seven for the Ospreys, but I think Pivac might give him a go as a six instead, to try and replicate that Navidi mold a little bit more and be quite physical around the breakdown. But that's kind of speculation. But yeah, no, I would agree with your point there as kind of a general thing about Wales and the kind of what the different kinds of back rowers that are promised.
Yeah, that sounds absolutely exciting. I mean, I was going to ask you about Jack Morgan and, you know, Jenkins and Basham. I think they all look like such talented flankers, and it just seems like Wales has just this never-ending supply of, you know, if you know, sevens. I think as long as I've been watching rugby, Wales have always had, you know, a world-class number seven. And it's, yeah, it's an interesting sort of strategy as to whether they go with a sort of a more traditional flank instead of the sort of the flank lock hybrid person, and play someone like Jenkins there, or play someone like Moriarty there, especially when Faletau and Tipperick come back. So with you know, Kane Basham was probably one of the players of the Autumn Nations series. Him and Ellis Jenkins, I think, impressed a lot, and they played well against all of the Southern Hemisphere teams that Wales faced. How do you see them sort of transitioning that form into the Six Nations? Of course, we're obviously in the middle of our summer, so it's the middle of your winter over there. It's a bit slow. It's a bit more physical and nutritional. Is that a style of play that they can adapt to?
That's a really, really good question. So I think that in terms of Ellis Jenkins, he's one of those guys where I recently did an Australian podcast, and I asked the host, that was the Rugby Fixation podcast. I asked him sort of how well the news has travelled about how good Ellis Jenkins is. I'm going to relay the same thing to you guys. Like, how do you view Ellis Jenkins down in South Africa?
Well, I've been a big fan of Ellis Jenkins from the start. So I was gutted that he pretty much missed the Lions tour. Like, he's a very Sam Warburton player for me. That's in the sense that he's great at everything, and you can sort of play him at six, play him at seven, and even if you have to play him at eight, he's a Welsh back row. He's a classic Welsh back row for me in that sense.
Yeah, he's great. I'm glad that the news has travelled there of how good he is, but I think it's probably because I would argue that three of his maybe top five performances in a Wales jersey, probably against the Springboks, that probably does help. That there was that man of the match performance where he sadly got his long term injury, and of course the one in Chicago, I think it was, which are kind of like the two wins that Wales have kind of ground out over the Springboks, where he's been massive in those games. He's somebody I just view as a real test match animal. I'm really shocked that he's not captaining Wales, that they've gone for bigger instead of him. But in terms of Basham, I think that there's a lot of really tough physical games that he will be great for, you know, like luckily Wales have Scotland at home this year, but Scotland away in Murrayfield is always one of those games where it's always just really, really rough. You know, any game you play against Ireland, the breakdown is really, really ferocious. So I think that Basham, in terms of defending our own ball, will be massive in that sense, if he does play. But obviously there's so many great back rowers in the Wales squad that it's so difficult to kind of call for certain who is actually going to play in all these games, especially when PVAC has such a sort of habit of rotating players around. So yeah, but I definitely think those players are capable of making that adjustment to the Six Nations and what's required there. Moriarty's another one who's done it before, as you say. So, but yeah, it's a very different kind of international rugby, but it's I definitely think those guys are all capable of translating that form. Yeah.
Well, with a few of the older guys out, especially in the forwards, I mean, Alan Wynn, Toby Faletau, Dan Lidiat out, for example, do you think, how many of those, the elder statesmen, do you think maybe time is up? How many of them do you think will make it to the World Cup next year? I mean, look at, like I said, we're speaking now about the depth Wales has that in those loosies especially. Do you think maybe it's time to stick with the youngsters and sort of use this year as a way to groom them? Like Gaspar comes to Africa in June, and then obviously Autumn Series. Do you think maybe it's time to let go of some of the older statesmen just before the World Cup?
I think it's an entirely fair observation, because I think that it's been made of Wales before that, as I've said, kind of alluded to, we're very reliant on the likes of Alan Wynne-Jones, the likes of Ken Owens, players like that who've sort of carried Wales a lot of times before. But maybe instead of letting them go, sort of slightly changing their roles so Wales are less reliant on them. Like they had it with Dan Biggar in the last World Cup, where They played Anscombe, who's, you know, not necessarily a great deal younger than Bigger, but they were planning to play Anscombe as a sort of starting number 10 in the World Cup, with Bigger as the experienced head to come off the bench and see the game out. And I'd imagine that there might be a bit more of that. Yeah, it's time moves so fast for Alan Wynne-Jones at this stage that we have no idea how he's going to be in terms of his fitness and everything with the few injuries he's picked up by 2023. So there's every chance that he could end up dropping to the bench. Not meaning that the other players starting will be better than him, but just because that's the way international rugby is now. It's a 23-man game. And as you say, like, some of those younger players, when Wales can make the most of having them, you know, like, they can make the most of having young, fit players who are good enough to take those positions. So I think you are right. I think that some of those guys may end up stepping down into sort of like a more finisher role, as Eddie Jones would call it. I can still see Ken Owens churning out 50 minutes at the start of a game come 2023, though. There's a few players like him who are, I've used the phrase already, a test match animal. So hopefully they do make it through.
Yeah, I think we are all just still setting bets on the side, just trying to see if Alan Wynne-Jones will make it to 200 test caps by the end of his career, which seems to be the next mountain he wants to climb. Well, just to move to the backs, there's been an interesting rumor that Josh Adams might play in the midfield. And yeah, it's interesting for many reasons. I mean, I think he's, personally, I think he's probably one of the best wingers in the world. But I know he has played a bit of 13 domestically. And it seems Wales is in a very interesting spot with their midfield options. Nick Tompkins, I think, had a great Auto Nation series. Haleholo is a good threat, even though he missed most of November. But Jonathan Davies doesn't seem to be, you know, at the same level of form that he has been, you know, for most of his career. So, yeah, how do you see that shaking up? Who are who's the pairing that that Pivac will trust? Is Josh Adams going to play at 13? Do you think that's a good idea?
So regarding Adams at 13, I'm really not in favour of that, because, as you say, like, Josh Adams probably, along with Cheslin Colby, Makazoli Mpimpi, and maybe like a few like Damian Penos and lads like that, Anthony Watson. I think we're talking some of the best wingers in the world here, as you say. And the wing at this stage is one of the most technical positions that any individual can play at international level. And I think Josh Adams does that so brilliantly. And I just think the international rugby should be beyond the point of going, oh, he's great, let's get more touches and put him in the midfield instead. Because Josh Adams' strengths are his kick chase and his finishing ability out wide. And if you play him in the midfield, sure, you're getting more touches because he's very, very physical. But you take away those aspects of his game to a large degree. So personally, I'm not in favour of Adams playing in the midfield. I think that he's one of the best wingers in the world, so play him on the wing, you know, that's because that's where he's best. In terms of in the midfield, it is admittedly like a little bit of probably the place where Wales have the least depth at the minute. As you say, Halaholo's been very, very good. And when he's made the step up to international rugby, he doesn't seem to be having much trouble doing that, which is great. Nick Tompkins is a player that I've been trying to figure out what on earth he is for about 2 years. And I still haven't got to the bottom of it. I still don't know what Nick Tompkins is. I still don't know if he's great or if he's, you know, mediocre. I still can't figure that out. But I like Nick Tompkins. I want that on the record. Who else? Owen Watkin is another guy who's hit a decent bit of form for the Ospreys recently. And when you say, as correctly, that Jonathan Davis's form hasn't been as great, obviously he's defensively very good, which I think is why he's still in the team or thereabouts. So there are some options. There's a little bit of concern about how strong those options are. But yeah, I definitely think that's an area that PVAC will be looking to find new options. And hopefully that players like Owen Watkin will step up.
Yeah, I think the move for Josh Adams is pretty much down to George North still being injured. I don't know if Alex Cuthbert could do a similar job with that and trying to get some grunts in the back line. But I think that's the main reason why they'd look at Josh Adams. But I agree with you. He's one of the best wingers in the world. He somehow reminds me of Brian Abana. I think it's just because he's solid at everything and he just scores all the time.
Yeah.
I know it's a terrible person to compare him to, because everyone will say, he's nowhere near Banner, but he's got the same template. He's just great at everything. There's no holes in his game.
Yeah, it's also criminal that Warren Gatland didn't play him in the Lions series. I was expecting that the whole time, that he would. I was expecting a back three of Adams, Liam Williams, and Duan Funamadva. I thought he was going to try to go for size against the Springbok back three, because they did try to attack us with their sort of kick chase game plan. But yeah, Adams is an amazing footballer, like at the back. And it's so interesting with what you say about Nick Tompkins, because was it the 2020 Six Nations where he looked like he just did everything fantastically? He was putting people through gaps. He was making line breaks himself. And then he had a bit of a dip, and then he seems like he's coming back now. He is a bit of a confusing player to figure out, but he does seem like he is. It would seem like the long, I know Halaholo is a bit old himself, but it does seem like the combination for now until 2023 should be Halaholo and Tompkins.
Yeah, it's difficult to call, really. Nick Tompkins, above all, is fun. That's what I like about Nick Tompkins. But I think Halaholo has really, really put his hand up. Hopefully, I think that it's a difficult one to call, because playing players into form hasn't always worked in past, especially with Gatland. He's had his issues with that. Jonathan Davis is very experienced, and as I say, he's defensively brilliant. So you would hope that he would be able to step up. But if not, then there is a bit of a question mark, because Tompkins is great, but I'm not sure if I see him as a guy who could potentially win Wales a World Cup. And I hope I'm wrong about that, because he's been very successful at club level with Saracens and has won silverware with them before. So hopefully he is that guy, and he can step up in the way he does with Saris. Who knows? It's a really, really difficult one to call right now.
And Noel, how do you see the back three? I think we've thought that obviously you see Liam Williams is back. You know, the question is playing wing or fullback. I was really impressed with John McNichol in the autumn series. I thought he looked something special at fullback. I know he got tested a lot against the box, and I thought he came through the test very well. So how do you see Wayne Pivot going with his back three, especially for Saturday?
Yeah, Johnny McNichol was one who's kind of come out of nowhere, because I think a lot of people kind of looked at him and just thought, well, he's just a winger. But as you say, he was really tested by both the box and the All Blacks in the autumn. And as you say, he did come through pretty well. It's not like he was, you know, tearing through them. But I think the Springboks have the best kick chase in the world, which is why they're as good as they are. But to come through that game having done a pretty good job is a spectacular task. So I really, really like McNichol as a fullback, because he is very effective at that first receiver role, you know, when Bigger or whoever is on the floor. And to have somebody else who can play with a bit of width as an extra receiver, I really like that. And I think that he probably is better at that than Liam Williams or even Halfpenny. But it's interesting, because they all have their strengths. I think Adams and Reece Zammit on the wings are both lightning. They're both brilliant. So fullback is kind of the most difficult one. And also who fits that slot on the bench, because Liam Williams can make an impact wherever you put him. And he was great against Australia in the autumn. I think Liam Williams is naturally one of those brilliant fullbacks, you know, from in the whole Northern Hemisphere. But in terms of the way Wales want to play, I'd love to see them giving a go to McNichol and maybe having Liam Williams come off the bench. But I think the way that they will go, because Liam Williams, let's face it, is probably the better player than McNichol. I think that him, Zammit and Adams, it's a really, really solid back three, both defensively, under the high ball, and they're all rapid in attack.
Yeah, I think that it's a good sort of like overview of the Welsh team and their options. I think let's move on to Saturday's game against Ireland. We were talking before recording that it just seems like, well, we all know that we all hate England, and we're all, you have supporters in South Africa as well. Any match against England, we always support the opposition. But it's also so funny to me just seeing the needle between fans on Twitter for Ireland versus Wales. I wasn't even aware that this was something that was was almost as personal, I think, for both sets of fans. But yeah, Ireland, of course, had an amazing Autumn Nations series. And as the joke goes, it does seem like this is the time for them to peak, you know, just in between World Cups. Yeah, it's a very tough match first up. And Ireland are probably most or a lot of people's favourites to win the Six Nations this year.
Yeah, I think I want to start off by adding, I really like this current Ireland team. I think that whilst, you know, they're not scoring the most flashy tries, you can imagine, but they're very efficient in the breakdown. They've got a really, really good kick chase game. And they're just very, very efficient at kind of strangling oppositions, as we sort of were saying earlier. Sorry, remind me what the end of your question was.
Oh, yeah, sort of just a general sort of like, you know, what do you think of Ireland? And sort of go on maybe about, are there places that Wales can maybe attack in the Irish team?
Okay, yeah, yeah. Okay, so I think that a big part of it is playing from one touchline to the other is something that Wales are particularly strong at. But Ireland are so defensively great, so it might just be having to win that kicking battle, which Ireland are so good at. So a lot might fall upon the shoulders of the likes of Tom Williams and Dan Biggar this Saturday. But it's going to be really, really tough because I never really look forward to playing Ireland because they, as I say, they're so strong up front. And whenever they beat Wales, it often feels like, oh, well, we've just been strangled there. And that's kind of like the crux of it, rather than feeling like you've been, you know, completely played off the park. But they always deserve to beat us when they do, I will add. But yeah, it's always a difficult one to predict going into a game against Ireland because it's a complete clash of styles. But yeah, if you had to pick one of them that is more likely to win in terms of this on style alone, Ireland is very, very difficult to get round.
Yeah, well, I found that Ireland's tempo on their attack over November was quite high. They were hitting like your 0 to 3 second rucks, what you sort of aiming for at test level. And we spoke about the Welsh back row earlier. I think that's probably a big plus for them this weekend. If you have, let's say we got Ellis Jenkins and Tane Basham in the back row this weekend, I think that's where Wales could cause a lot of damage for Ireland. And in the same sense that they're missing their James Lowe and having that extra big left boots, I think that's an area where Wales can really put pressure on and try win more breakdown penalties on defence. Then if they sharp in that area, I think it can go a long way for them.
Definitely, definitely. I think that probably the biggest battle of the day will be Ellis Jenkins against Josh van der Fleer, assuming they're the two who are going to start. Van der Fleer has been on incredible form for that. I say incredible form, he's just been brilliant for years now. It'll be interesting to see who they bring on the wing for Lowe, because as you say, there's not really a big left footer other than Simon Zeebo in the squad. So it'll be interesting to see whether they go for him or for Mac Hansen, who's been on incredible form for Connaught. I'm really excited to see what Team Ireland name, because it will be difficult. I do think actually their team will probably say a lot about how they're going to play.
I agree with you.
Good. No, I was going to say, I agree with you there, Will, because I don't know how you feel about this, Will, but I really think that Ireland finally, especially Andy Farrell last year, found a way to incorporate James Lowe into their attack. And I think he's a massive cog in their attack and the way they play, because you could see that last year, especially at high tempo. I think the key question is, how do they play without him? And will they still be able to play with that same tempo, that same options they had in the back line without James Lowe? Because he's such a special, like a different player that no one else in their squad something offers. So maybe someone like Zeebo could offer a little bit of that.
Yeah, I think it will still be okay. I think they'll still be just as good, to be fair, because they're an extremely system-led team. So I think that whoever does slot in on that, whether it is Hansen or Zeebo or Conway or whoever, will probably be able to do the job just as well. Or even Earls, because he's kind of developed into a bit more of a grafter in the last couple of years. So I think that they won't struggle to find somebody to do Lowe's job for them. As much as Lowe does a fantastic job, both whether that's carrying a midfield or kicking, as you say, I think they'll be okay without him though. I don't think he's going to compromise them too much because they're so hot on their systems.
I wonder how much confidence Wales can take from Cardiff beating Leinster over the weekend. And if Wales beats Ireland, will they offer them a tunnel? Will Ireland offer Wales a tunnel?
I think that was all a rumor at the end of the day, wasn't it? I think somebody was making it up to troll on Twitter, and all power to them. I think tunnels and rugby values all round, I reckon.
We'll be looking forward to watching into that. I think the other question is just looking beyond the Irish test is, I assume it's probably England, but is there another match you're looking forward to in terms of, matchup or rivalry that for Wales, for the Six Nations this year?
Yeah, I think one at the minute, England is always the correct answer because that's the big one against the old enemy. That's always the game that we want Wales to win. I think France will be interesting playing in Cardiff. Presumably in front of a packed house, because I've no idea how that's going to go. I assume France will probably do very well, considering they're all some form and just they've got a really great young squad now. I think the game I'm currently looking forward to most in Six Nations is England against Scotland. I always love seeing those two go head-to-head, especially like under Gregor Townsend. Scotland have been relentless against England. I think they've won like 3 or 4 Cuckoo Cups on the row. So that's weirdly probably overtaken Wales England for the game I get most excited for now.
Well, that's very interesting. Well, I must agree with you that I'm actually quite excited for Wales versus France. Normally because they like a dog show, those games. And I'm just keen to see if France can actually turn it into a game that people watch over and over. I can sit and watch a dogfight every day of the week. I'm a South African, but that's definitely one of the games that I'm looking forward to, is that if both teams can come with that attacking, more attractive, cliche definitely. Kind of rugby.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I think that both teams play with a lot of intent. The names speak for themselves. You've got the likes of Aldrete, Ontemac, Jalibert currently cutting about this French team. I know that Ontemac's currently out, but those names really speak to themselves, don't they? Oh,
no, 100%. Another question for you, sorry, is... We've spoken a lot about Wales injuries for this Six Nations, but it seems to be the same conversation over and over. Do you think it's that bad? And I think the bookies have Wales at 6-1 to win against Ireland this weekend. Do you think it's really that bad for Wales, or can we see another second or first place finish from Wales?
It's interesting because I think I must just be really numb to it. I must just be really used to Wales getting loads of injuries. I think this is like, I just don't know how it feels to have a full squad. So I don't think this is any worse than a normal Six Nations. As I said, like you do look at the likes of Faletau, Owens, Navidi, Alan, all of those guys who are all out. But I kind of had to wrap my brains to think of them because it's still a strong squad Wales have. So I don't think it is that bad. I think that they're still at just as competitive level as they would be if they had all those names available. So I don't think it's any worse than any normal given year. But obviously, when you do rattle off those names, it does feel obvious, like there are a lot of injuries. But personally, I think that Wales can't pity themselves as much as they maybe could have in previous Six Nations when it comes to lots of injuries. I think that, I think we need to stop complaining.
That's fair enough.
The guys will know. Well, I think the game I'm looking forward to is the 5 games that Finn Russell plays, and I'm a simple man. But Six Nations and this year, what as a Welsh fan or looking for, like, what ideally would you say is the most ideal year? Is it developing the youngsters? Is it trying to make sure the guys like Galloway Jones and Fertile get back, and then you make the big push for next year? What would you like to see overall from Wales? Is it Six Nations and the bigger picture?
Sure, yeah. I think that obviously the goal is to win a World Cup. So I think that As long as the performance is okay and we develop more options, I don't really mind how the Six Nations goes. Obviously, you never want to finish fourth or fifth or sixth in the Six Nations. You always want to finish towards the top. But I honestly would not mind if Wales didn't win the Six Nations, as long as the performance is okay and just has developed something towards next year. I would rather win next year's Six Nations before the World Cup than win this year's. And that's truthful. As I say, you never want to finish near the bottom under any circumstances. But I think that the big focus, as you say, is developing depth and bringing through a few more options. And I think PVAC knows that.
And maybe getting a scalp in South Africa in June.
Who knows? I mean, it's going to be difficult, isn't it? But whether it's likely, I don't necessarily think so. I think that going to South Africa and winning is such a tough task, but I think it is important that these guys are tested against the Springboks, especially, you know, after what everything that happened with the Lions. I think that a lot of players will be hungry to try and get a scalp over there, but the Springboks are in quite a strange position at the minute, because they were probably until about maybe 6 months ago, if that, objectively, by a long way, the best team in the world. And now they've picked up a couple of losses along the way. I think they probably still are the best team in the world. I back them over the All Blacks, certainly. I think that, you know, England and France are in contention, and Ireland as well. But I still think South Africa probably are the best team in the world. I think they're very well coached, but with Nainggolan and, and Erasmus. We'll see how long he's sticking around for. But it's going to be tough to pick up a win over there in June. But I think it's very good exposure to the highest level of Test rugby for some of the young guys in the Wales squad.
Yeah, nice comments about the Springboks will always get you invited back onto this pod for sure. So we'll definitely see you in July. But yeah, I think before we wrap up, it seems like you're still in a good space about Wales. You want some development more so than necessarily victories. And I think the Six Nations are set up with these injuries for a few new heroes to emerge. And then PVAC's sort of task will be then mixing sort of the old guard with these new youngsters that come into the team. Broadly, what's your prediction for the Six Nations? Are we seeing a Grand Slam this year? Who do you have taking it?
Something tells me it won't be a Grand Slam, because it's interesting. Like, Ireland could beat anybody, France could beat anybody, but at the end of the day, you look at like England could beat anybody. Those three could all beat each other. Wales could beat probably any one or maybe two of them, but I doubt they'll beat all three. Scotland are playing such a fantastic brand of rugby. Like, I think that Finn Russell is one of the greatest players to maybe ever play the game. And, you know, backed by Stuart Hogg, they've got a huge backline. They've got the best kicking game probably in the tournament. So it's a really difficult one to call. I'm going to try and not dodge the question. So not a Grand Slam. And if you had a gun to my head right now, the name that would come out of my head would be France. But I might live to regret that. I might change my mind in about 2 minutes.
And well, does Italy break their duck?
I think maybe not this year, but in the coming years, yes. Me and Robbie with Squidge Channel have recently done a video on Italy, talking about their academy system's been really, really good lately. They've brought through a couple of really good under-20s teams. And I think that they're probably a couple more years of losing every game, and then they'll be a bit more competitive afterwards.
No, yeah. Well, you had me at Finn Russell being one of the greatest players to have played. I'll tell her that loud and clear. That's the main, that's what I'm taking out of this entire podcast.
If you haven't noticed already, Cooks is a massive Finn Russell fan.
Yeah, he's unbelievable. No, I just think there's nobody in the world who can spot space like him. I think that we've probably all had nightmares about playing on the wing opposite Finn Russell, because if you're too flat, he'll put it behind you, score a 50-22. If you're too deep, then your opposite man's about to score against you. He's impossible to defend. He's just one of, yeah, as I say, he's one of the greatest 10s, if not the greatest 10, to play the game in the last however long.
Just preach, Will. Preach.
Yes. Yeah. If you want to start a separate podcast solely devoted to Finn Russell, then I will happily guest on that every week.
I feel like I found someone to join me in this choir. This is what I've needed. Where have you been all my life?
I'm glad we've put you two together now. I think that's a great way to sort of round up everything. I think it's going to be an exciting Six Nations, and for sure, I think every rugby fan around the world is really keen to see how it sets up. And there are five teams, even Wales, because I think even when you doubt Wales, they're usually strong. There are five teams that can win it. Even though we haven't talked much about Scotland, I think Scotland also looks quite strong this year.
Yeah. I wouldn't be Welsh if I wasn't pessimistic at the same time.
Yeah. I think, just a quick last question.
Yeah, go for it.
I think maybe it's because we're still new to URC and just seeing sort of different fans sort of like attitudes. And I know South African fans are negative and I know we blame everything on the ref. But geez, well, Welsh fans hate either they hate their union or they hate their clubs. What's going on? Why is it so negative, the sentiment about rugby there in Wales?
Quite honestly, this is quite a strange point to dive into, but I think it's genuinely just kind of a personality trait of the Welsh people to be like self-depreciating. It's really interesting the divide you see, because it's happened before where like either you'll be really, really like down on yourself or really like jokingly playing it up. And different cultures kind of like don't quite realize that. And like, you know, the British generally are known for having like really dry sarcasm, sense of humor and stuff. But there's always, I just think it's part of like the whole Welsh psyche. That might be me just like completely stereotyping Wales as a nation. But I think that probably in all respects, it's quite a common theme. Wales, we're always really down on ourselves, even when we're great. Like, even like during the World Cup, when Wales were sort of, I think there was a brief period in 2019 where Wales were favourites to win the thing. Like, and we were still going like, no, we're going to lose to Fiji the whole time. And just constantly scared. I think that we just really don't deal well with the pressure on us or eyes on us.
Yeah, we can't wait for the every 4 year clash between Wales and Fiji that seems to happen all the time.
Oh God, I hate it. It's honestly, so Wales's win over Fiji in 2019 was one of the games of rugby I've enjoyed least in my entire life. Even though Wales won the thing. I still get like horrid flashbacks to a point where Semi Randrandra got the ball like in his own 5 meter line, and I was like, he's going to score here. And he nearly did. And oh God, it's such a traumatic experience that anytime we play Fiji.
Awesome. I think we can sort of wrap up on that note. I'd like to Semi Randrandra in the Six Nations. Thank you so much, Will, for joining us. Thank you so much for just, you know, educating us and the listeners about, you know, the state of Welsh rugby and what to look forward to. I think especially, yeah, when you look at, you know, some of these youngsters that are coming through, especially someone like Ellis Jenkins and Tane Basham and Jack Morgan, it's really just so exciting that there's just another layer and another generation of just fantastic Welsh loose forwards and just, yeah, other talents that will come into the team in the next few years. So I think it seems like this 2022 Six Nations will be sort of the start of a new journey for PIVAC and for the country.
Yeah, definitely. I think that it is that there are optimistic aspects to Welsh rugby, providing we make it through. It, you know, if Wales can perform well with these injuries and key positions, I think that will put them in good stead ahead of a World Cup. But yeah, no, again, like, thank you to go back to your first point. You know, thank you for having me on. I've really enjoyed getting the chance to talk through Wales, and it's given me a little bit of optimism, I think, which is great.
Awesome. It was great to have you on, Will. Thank you very much.
No, thanks, guys. It's been a joy. Thanks for asking me on.
No, pleasure. Thanks. Always enjoy chatting rugby.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll pick up the Finn Russell chat later.
100%. 100,000%.
And that's Cooks and Will Owen in their future Finn Russell podcast. And Will Owen, yes, you'll see him at Squid Rugby and Rugby Pass as well. Amazing content as always. And yeah, you, if you're a rugby fan, you will, you should definitely be following him. So thank you so much for joining us on Rugby Pits Pod. We will see you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.